You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Thursday, July 29th, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we recap an exciting win for the Orioles from Wednesday night. It's another walk-off win for the O's in this one, their fourth walk-off win of the season, and their second in just the last three games as the O's beat the Marlins to split the series. We'll talk about all that, including Ryan McKenna's heroics, and then we will continue our series taking a look at the Orioles draft picks from a couple of weeks ago. Today we move on to the seventh rounder, Connor Pavlone, the catcher out of Tennessee, and we're going to be joined by John Wilkerson. He is the play-by-play voice of Tennessee Volunteers Baseball. He'll join the pod for the second time as we will talk about Pavlone, his career at Tennessee, his defense, his offense, the injury he played through this year, and what he could do in an Orioles uniform. Then we will do a little preview of tonight's game as the Orioles start a four-game series in Detroit against the Tigers. But that's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by another exciting show coming up here on the network. The MLB trade deadline is approaching, and the Locked On MLB YouTube channel will be streaming the Hot Stove live, 2 hours of MLB trade analysis from our Locked On lineup of local experts. Subscribe to Locked On MLB on YouTube and tune in tomorrow, Friday, July 30th, beginning at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. You might even see me on that show if the Orioles do end up making a trade at tomorrow's deadline. But before we get to all that deadline stuff, we got to start with the Orioles game from Wednesday night as the O's walk it off, beat the Marlins 8-7 to split the quick two-game series against Miami. Orioles now 35-65 on the season as they hit the 100-game mark of the year, 35 wins for the Orioles, and they go 4-1 on this quick little homestand against the Nationals and the Marlins. So we're going to get you the five things you need to know from the Orioles 8-7 win over the Marlins from Wednesday night. And the first thing you need to know is that Ryan McKenna played hero once again for the Orioles. Of course, McKenna in Sunday's walk-off win against the Nationals scored from third on the Ramon Urias ground ball, and really the speed was what allowed him to just barely beat that throw out at the plate for the walk-off win Sunday. McKenna was even more involved in being the hero in Wednesday night's game. He came into the ballgame in the bottom of the eighth inning. Marlins had former friend Richard Blyer on the mound, and DJ Stewart was due up, and Brandon Hyde went to Ryan McKenna as a pinch hitter to get a righty against the lefty with one out and nobody on, and the Orioles trailing 7-5 in the eighth inning. And McKenna ended up drawing a nice little seven-pitch walk to get himself on base. He ended up going to third on a Ramon Urias double and came home to score on a ground ball and a throwing error, and he eventually made it 7-6 in the game. And of course, the Orioles would tie it in the next batter, Michael Franco, with an RBI single through the right side, tied the game at 7. But Ryan McKenna would not be done. Of course, he would stay in the game and play left field. And then he came up again in the ninth inning after Cedric Mullins with a leadoff walk in the inning. He goes to second on a wild pitch, goes to third with one out. And the Marlins end up intentionally walking Trey Mancini and Ryan Mountcastle back-to-back to load the bases with one out in a tie game in the bottom of the ninth, and up steps Ryan McKenna. Now, you get why they would do that. Mancini and Mountcastle, two of the most dangerous hitters in the lineup, versus McKenna, who has, you know, about a 550 OPS on the season. So probably a smart move, but what they didn't take into account is that the pitcher who was on the mound, Stephen Okert, had already walked Cedric Mullins and wasn't throwing a lot of strikes, and now you have to make sure he doesn't walk anyone, and in steps Ryan McKenna, an 8-pitch AB, and on 3-2, he takes a fastball low for ball 4 for a walk-off walk. The shirt got removed from Ryan McKenna in the celebration, and the Orioles win it 8-7. And I gotta say, you know, we've seen a lot of Ryan McKenna so far this season. Again, just a 551 OPS, 183 batting average. Obviously, he's been great in the field, playing all three outfield positions, good base runner, a lot of speed. But, you know, we haven't seen him get a lot of big moments at the plate, but this was one of them. Of course, he had his first career home run on Sunday and then scored of course, the game-winning run. And then he does it again here. And, you know, McKenna's starting to heat up. And, you know, there's a lot of different thoughts about McKenna. Many think, you know, he should probably slot in around 15 to 20 in the Orioles prospect rankings. You know, he's maybe not a future starter, maybe a future fourth outfielder. But there's other guys like Eric Longenhagen, who is the lead prospect analyst over at Fangraphs, who had Ryan McKenna as the Orioles' number 7 ranked prospect coming into this season and is actually really high on McKenna. Of course, we've seen a lot of him. He's been, you know, really up and down between here and Norfolk all year. But, you know, we will see if this can start to get him heated up a little bit. And, you know, with Santander still out on the COVID IL, now we know he's starting baseball activities again and should be back soon. And with DJ Stewart struggling, maybe McKenna plays even more and we can see even more of him in the Orioles lineup. Now, second thing you need to know from the Orioles win is that despite a victory, Jorge Lopez was bad for the Orioles. He matched his shortest start of the year, lasting just 2 innings in this one, allowing 5 runs on 7 hits. He struck out 2, walked 2, allowed a home run, threw 58 pitches, and the ERA now 6.19 for Lopez on the season. And he simply just did not have it in this one. You know, he threw some good curveballs. You know, he did get 6 whiffs on 58 pitches, which isn't bad. You know, he threw some solid fastballs. He was throwing, you know, 96, 97, but it wasn't there for Jorge Lopez. He gave up some kind of cheapy singles in the first inning, to be fair to him. But he gave up 2 in the first, 3 in the second, including a 2-run home run to Jesus Aguilar, and it just wasn't there. And he probably could have stayed in the game, you know, 58 pitches through 2 innings, but Brandon Hyde immediately pulls him out of the game after 2, and, you know, the O's were down 5-0, and a great job by them to storm back. But the third thing you need to know actually has to do with the rest of the Oriole bullpen, as once again, it did its job to keep the Orioles in this game, give them a chance to win. Now, after Jorge Lopez came out, we saw Thomas Eshelman, who somehow hadn't pitched since July 10th. Now, of course, the All-Star break was in there as well, but it had been 18 days since Thomas Eshelman had pitched, and he had been on the active roster that entire time. The Orioles finally find a spot to get him in the game, and it wasn't great, but he did okay. 3 innings, 2 runs, 2 hits, a strikeout, and 2 walks for Eshelman. And again, not great, but he did a good enough job to give the Orioles a little bit of length and keep them in the game and allow them to come back a little bit in this one and, you know, tie the game at 5 in the third, and then it was a 7-5 game. And then in stepped Cesar Valdez, who continues to pitch well. 2 scoreless innings from Cesar Valdez, 1 hit, 2 strikeouts, 1 walk. That's now 8 consecutive scoreless innings for Valdez. The dead fish is back. Cole Sulcer comes in for the Orioles. He ends up throwing a scoreless 8th with a couple of strikeouts, did walk one guy. Then the Orioles go to Dylan Tate, who actually struggled a little bit, a walk, a single, and then he did really Lewis Brinson just looks silly trying to bunt to strike him out. And then the Orioles go to Tanner Scott, who gets the next 2 batters out to get out of the jam in the top of the 9th and keep it at a 7-7 game and set it up for the O's to win it in the bottom of the 9th. Another great job. Valdez, Sulcer, Tate, and Scott, all those guys. You really add in Paul Fry to that mix for the Orioles right now. They've got 5 really solid relievers right now that they can go to, and that is with Tyler Wells on the injured list. He should be back soon, and you really got 6 guys when you had Wells that you could go to. I'm feeling pretty good right there about the Orioles bullpen. Fourth thing you need to know is that, you know, it was obviously the heroics in the 9th inning and the cool comeback in the 8th inning, but for the Orioles, you know, they really rallied quickly in this game. I mean, they trailed 5-0 after an inning and a half, and they did not go away. They had 3 runs in the bottom of the 2nd to put themselves right back in this game. Pedro Severino hit a big 3-run homer in the 2nd to get it back to 5-3. They really got to the pitcher. Jordan Holloway gave up 5 runs in 2 1/3 and came out of the game. And then they got 2 more in the 3rd and tied the game up. Trey Mancini with a solo home run, his 19th. Cool moment for Trey, of course. It's been 1 year since Mogaba's passing, and, you know, it was a great, great moment for Trey with Mo's family in the stands, and, you know, giving a shout out to them after he hit his home run in the 3rd. And then Ramon Arias had an RBI single to tie the game at 5. And although the Marlins got 2 more in the 4th to take the lead, the Orioles never quit. They came back and, you know, they got 2 in the 8th and 1 in the 9th and won the game. So a lot of fight from that Oriole offense in the ball game. And then the 5th and final thing you need to know from the Orioles' 8-7 win over the Marlins is that the Marlins' fatal flaw was they used too many former Orioles in this game, to be honest. four former Orioles pitchers pitched against the Orioles in this game. We start with David Hess. Of course, you know David Hess, the 28-year-old right-hander who the Orioles took in the fifth round of the 2014 draft out of Tennessee Tech. Pitched for the O's 2018, 2019, and 2020 at the major league level. 47 games in that time with the Orioles, 33 starts, 190 and a third innings, 5.86 ERA in Baltimore. Orioles released him after 2020. He caught on with the Rays in the minor leagues, but never made it to the majors, got waived. Miami picked him up, and now eight appearances out of the Miami bullpen and a 4.97 ERA. He actually wasn't bad. An inning and two-thirds, scoreless for Hess out of the bullpen after he relieved Jordan Holloway in the third. One hit, two strikeouts, and no walks. Then the Marlins turn it over to the 24-year-old right-hander Zach Pop. Of course, was the big issue for the Orioles this offseason. Pop was the one player that the O's really did not protect, the one prospect they didn't protect on the 40-man roster. They left him open to the Rule 5 draft. The Arizona Diamondbacks selected him in the Rule 5 draft and immediately traded him to the Marlins. And, you know, the talk all season was, you know, will Pop be returned back to the Orioles? Doesn't look like that's the case. Not that he's been amazing, but he's going to stay on this Marlins roster all year. 33 appearances for Pop this season, a 5.15 ERA and 36 and two-thirds innings out of the bullpen. And listen, you know, he came into the game, he threw a scoreless fifth. He did give up two hits, but he struck out one and didn't walk anyone. And of course, Pop, another piece that the Orioles acquired from the Dodgers in the Manny Machado trade, who, you know, is either not working out for the Orioles or not even on the Orioles at all. It looks like, again, he is going to stick with the Marlins. Now, next up, this one a little bit of a deeper cut here. In the sixth inning, the Marlins go to the 34-year-old right-hander Preston Guillemette, who pitched with the Orioles all the way back in 2014. That's right, he was a part of the AL East champion team in 2014. He pitched in 10 games out of the Oriole bullpen that year, a 5.23 ERA in 10 and a third innings. He allowed 6 runs on 8 hits, struck out 12, and walked 2. He's been around the block since then. He had pitched for Cleveland before then. He pitched for Tampa, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Toronto, and he hadn't been in the big since 2018, but the Marlins recalled him, and he made his Marlins debut the other day. This was his second appearance with the Fish, and he sets the Orioles down 1-2-3. But the Orioles were not done facing former pitchers from their team after John Curtis threw an inning and a third scoreless. The Marlins turned it over to Richard Bleier with one out and nobody on in the eighth in a 7-5 game. And this is where it finally caught up to the Marlins. The last three former Orioles had thrown scoreless appearances. Not the case for Richard Bleier. He walks McKenna, allows a double to Arias, then a ground ball scores one run, an RBI single from Michael Franco scores another run. Richard Bleier ends up blowing the lead. He goes two-thirds of an inning, allowing 2 runs on 2 hits, no strikeouts, and 1 walk for the former Oriole left-hander Richard Bleier, who, of course, spent multiple years with the O's until Baltimore traded him over to the Marlins right at the beginning of the 2020 season. Of course, Bleier spent parts of 2017 through 2020 with the Orioles in his time in Baltimore, 143 appearances out of the Orioles bullpen, a 3.15 ERA in 154 and a third innings. I think you kind of forget how good Bleier was. 2017, a 1.99 ERA in 57 appearances. 2018, a 1.93 ERA in 31 appearances till he got injured. And really, since he came back from the injury, he just hadn't been the same. But he's been pretty good out of the Marlins bullpen this year. A 3.00 ERA in 43 relief appearances. But it caught up to the Marlins. They used too many former Orioles, and the O's got to him again with the walk-off walk from Ryan McKenna to beat the Marlins 8-7 and split that quick two-game series. But back down at the lower levels of the minor leagues for the Orioles, they're getting more of an influx of players that hopefully will get to the major league level soon and be able to help with some of these walk-off wins. And one of these guys we're talking about from the MLB draft is the seventh rounder Connor Pavlone, the catcher out of Tennessee that the O's selected, and he is up next in our Orioles MLB draft breakdown series. And coming on the pod to help talk about Pavlone is John Wilkerson. He is the play-by-play voice of Tennessee Volunteers Baseball. He's been on this podcast once before back in the winter to talk about Garrett Stallings after the Orioles acquired him in the Jose Iglesias trade. Of course, Stallings Stallings pitched 3 years at Tennessee, and John joined us to talk about him. This time, John Wilkerson joins us to talk about Connor Pavlone, his defensive skills behind the plate, his offensive development, the injury that he played through this season, and what he could bring to the Orioles. So that's all coming up right after this break. We are talking with John Wilkerson about Orioles' seventh-round pick, the catcher out of Tennessee, Connor Pavlone. So we'll get back to talking Orioles in just a second, but first, this episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to RockAuto.com at home and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. And the best part about the site, the prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low for every single customer. And they have everything you could need. Brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. So go explore the website today. It's super easy to use. So go to RockAuto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. And write Locked On Orioles in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. So we welcome John Wilkerson back into the podcast. He is the play-by-play voice of Tennessee Volunteers baseball, and he has been on this podcast one time before as we talked about Garrett Stallings back in the fall after the Orioles acquired him from the Angels. Now we're going to talk about a full Tennessee battery that is going to be in the Orioles system as the O's drafted Connor Pavlone in the seventh round. And first of all, John, thank you so much for joining us back here on the podcast.
Oh, glad to, Connor. Great to talk to you again.
And it's great that the Orioles have drafted another Tennessee Vol, another Connor into the system for Tennessee. And I just wanted to start with, you know, when you draft catchers, especially guys that don't go in the first or second rounds, I think a lot of people assume that, all right, this is a pick for defense. But, you know, when looking at Pavlone's bat, I mean, he can swing it as well. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but he's got a pretty good bat in the box as well.
He does. One of the things that I missed so much about last year, and that would be 2020, not being able to be played out, is that Connor was off to such a great start when it came to the offensive side of the game. It was his defense and his glove and his ability to receive that had him playing from the moment he arrived on campus. But last year, he got off to such a great start offensively. He was actually the Tennessee player that was returning with the most home runs. He hit four in the 17 games that Tennessee played, had come up with a huge hit that helped Tennessee rally against Houston and finish off sweeping the Round Rock Classic, the first ever, which was a stacked field that started with number one Texas Tech, then Houston, where Pavlone came up with a huge hit, and then Stanford, which Tennessee beat to finish that trip to Texas. But he was just off to such a great start offensively that I would have loved to have seen how his second year as Tennessee's catcher would have finished. And then this year, again, outstanding behind the plate, but I don't know if it was the preseason All-America status that perhaps had him perhaps trying a little too hard in the batter's box at the start of the season, but it was really a rough stretch for him until we got to conference play. And what really impressed me is he spent the better part of the season hovering right around that 210, 220 mark. And then in the teeth of the SEC schedule, that's when he started to build his batting average, his home runs, his runs batted in. I mean, they started to climb. And when you do that at the tail end of the season against conference play, to me, that's really impressive. And I mean, he really fought through it. And I do think that he is an outstanding all-around prospect that the Orioles now have.
Now, as I understand it, you know, he took a pitch off the hand this year and only missed like a week. And then his offensive numbers almost kind of got better when he returned from that.
Yeah, that was because that was against Vanderbilt, which was week five of the SEC schedule. And it was in the tail end of the Saturday game, I guess about two thirds of the way through it in the middle innings. And he took a pitch to the hand. He thought his season was over. They were sure that it was a fracture. They wanted to wait and make sure with the x-ray and all that. But as he left the field, I mean, it wasn't long after that the tears came because he thought his season was done. And thankfully, it turned out to be just a very much hairline fracture. And so he was able to get back in the next, not the next week, but within a week, that it was Tennessee going to Texas A&M. And so he was a part of that. And it really was something to watch him fight through that. He did miss the Kentucky series, and then was able to get back on the field and behind the plate against Texas A&M, actually wound up with a very nice weekend in the batter's box. And then it was something that while taking BP a little bit later, he took himself out of the lineup when he was just crushing it. And it turns out there had been a little bit more of an issue with that same injury, but he was, I mean, such a stalwart for Tennessee. It wasn't long before he was back behind the plate once again. And it was amazing to watch him just fight through this season because he was what Tony Vitello felt gave Tennessee the best chance to win, was with him behind the plate and handling the staff.
Yeah, and it obviously worked. I know he had some key hits in the postseason, big homer against Wright State, big homer against LSU as well. But I did want to talk about the defense, because obviously, you know, when you draft a catcher, that's going to be a big part of it. So in terms of just strictly, you know, handling a pitching staff, handling some top arms, and frankly, being on this Tennessee team that, you know, finally really, really breaks out this season, you know, how did he handle that role in his third year?
He handled it so well. And you had just a really nice mix, because you had pitchers and a catcher that had worked together for some time. You look at the guys that Tennessee relied upon, and that was Chad Dallas, who got drafted by the Blue Jays earlier. He was the Friday starter. Then you had Will Heflin, who was a senior, actually his fifth year in the program. He was going in game two on the weekend. And then you had a freshman in Blade Tidwell, who was freshman All-American. And I definitely think that he benefited by having Connor Pavloni behind the plate. Now, one thing that I do think that might be just a little bit that will be better than perhaps the numbers say is his ability to deal with opposing base runners. I think he threw out 9 on the season, and I definitely think he's got the arm to do it. And I just think there was some wear and tear that perhaps that might be the area that affected him most, with the fact that he caught not just 2 out of 3 games, but in most instances caught every game during the weekend. So to me, that was the number one deal that perhaps this season's numbers don't reflect upon as well as they should, and that will be his ability to work and deal with opposing base runners.
And then, you know, we know this is a very tough thing, you know, at any level, but especially below the major league level, to kind of quantify. And we don't know how big of an issue this will be if, you know, potentially the electronic strike zone comes into play. But I've heard people talk about him being a really good framer. And I know, you know, there's not a lot of numbers in college baseball to back that up, but does it kind of pass the eye test of him being somebody who can steal some strikes?
I think it definitely does. And he is always going to be somebody who works as hard as he possibly can, either whether it be a trip to the mound or, as you talk about, being able to just kind of slide that glove back in to the black. I do think that he is somebody that does such a good job of handling all aspects of the game and a game specific. So I really am impressed with what he's been able to do and how consistent he's been when it comes to his work behind the plate. But I do think that's something else that you would certainly put the check mark in terms of the intangibles, the ability to frame a pitch nicely.
Just a couple more things for you. I did want to ask about, you know, him coming in as a true freshman and being a starting catcher, because it's one thing to get a starting role as a true freshman, but when you have to come in and play such a key role on a team and handle a pitching staff and worry about, you know, yourself at the plate as well, you know, how did he handle all that? Because I know probably the batting average wasn't where he wanted it to be in 2019, but he still had good offensive stats and, you know, ended up being the starter for most of the year.
Yeah, well, this was somebody that Tony Vitello was so excited to land because he knew what he brought to the team. And I also think that he's benefited greatly because Tennessee's recruiting coordinator, third base coach, and he engineers the offense is Josh Elander. And he was a catcher himself in college, and pro career didn't go as long as he had hoped, but he just got slowed by injury. But I think that he has had such a huge impact on taking what was God-given ability to Connor and continuing to develop it. So I think Josh Elander, just to watch him work with Pav has really been something special. And also to have Frank Anderson as involved in this. Tony Vitello will tell you he's the best pitching coach in college baseball, and to have the opportunity to work with Coach A as well as the staff, I think this is all something that has helped bring out the very best of Connor Pavlone. But he was just somebody who had the look of a ball player from the moment that he walked on the field for the first time at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. They knew they had what they expected to get, and that was somebody who was going to be so good receiving. And then if they got anything from him offensively, they just pointed to it as gravy. Not that it was anything that would take them by surprise, but just that he's so good at that aspect of his game that the offense is everything from that point on is just a big bonus. But the fact that he could be so strong, so composed, and you won't find a more determined player. What's pretty funny is when Tennessee was able to host a regional and then the super regional, I asked Coach whether or not he felt that perhaps it was better to have the team in a hotel or something so you could keep them all together, make sure that they were focused and not going through any distractions. And he says, I'll just start with this, that if I decided to bring him in and have them all stay together, we would be waking Pavlone up if we knocked on his door at 11, because he's usually in bed at 9. He's that kind of just maniac when it comes to the rest and recovery. He does exactly what it takes, as much as he can, to just recharge, retool, and re-energize. And you can go back to the one that really stood out to me was Tennessee's backup catcher was not available when they opened SEC play at Georgia. And Pavlone just took a beating when it came to a particular game. A lot of balls skipped into the catcher, and then, I mean, he gets hit by a throw as he's going to first base, got hit by a throw again as he was scoring from third, and you could just see he could almost barely carry himself from behind home plate over to the third base dugout, but he was just ready to go when the bell rang, and that's the determination, just the grit that makes him be such a special individual. But I mean, he's taken care of all aspects of everything that you would want in a college baseball player, and it's really exciting to see him get this opportunity with Baltimore.
Two more things for you. The first one really quickly, I just had to ask, you know, you're someone who's watching these games and seeing them accrue the stats. 5 stolen bases for him. Is it sneaky speed, or did he get some of those, you know, odd stolen bases you'll pick up throughout the season?
Well, I do think that he is somebody that can legitimately, I mean, there are some times that he was the caboose on a double steal, but he is also somebody that will, by surprise, catch the other team napping. So I think he's really good at picking his spots, but I also think that he is somebody that perhaps doesn't get enough credit for being, not going to say fast, but we'll go with quick.
And then the last thing I wanted to ask you, you know, just with the bat, you know, the power seemed to come a little bit more each year. And obviously he had the big time start in 2020 with the power before the season was shut down. And then he kind of was able to flash it, you know, where everybody was watching this year in the NCAA regionals and the super regionals with the homers. So, you know, just the final question is, do you feel like he is still at the point where, you know, the bat and the power and his swing is kind of, you know, still developing where the Orioles could get him in and continue to get that hit tool better and better?
Yes, I definitely think so. And I also think that if perhaps he doesn't leave the yard, he's getting much better at finding both gaps. It's not as though he's going to load it all up, although some teams did play him with a shift to the left side. He is somebody who can also beat the shift. So I just think that he's somebody who can find the gap in left center, the gap in right center, and I believe it was against LSU that he actually had the home run to right. So I do think that's an aspect of his game that still there is a ceiling with which he has yet to kind of reach the highest height.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us once again as the Orioles get another Tennessee guy in. And I will say it's going to be cool. I know Garrett Stallings has already tweeted about it. He's excited to have Connor potentially catching him once again at some point this year or years down the road as the O's keep bringing in these Tennessee guys. But, John, thank you so much once again for joining us to tell us a little bit about one of the Orioles' newest catchers in Connor Pavlone.
Always glad to do it. When they go from Tennessee to Baltimore, one thing both fans can rest assured, we know they look good in orange.
So we'll get back to chatting Orioles in just a second, but first got to tell you about betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. And now we got baseball season in full swing. You can track all the baseball action over at betonline.ag and get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, not just baseball. How about UFC and MMA action on Saturday nights? How about some NBA draft props with the NBA draft airing tonight? So before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you can receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that is promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. So our thanks again to John Wilkerson, the play-by-play voice of Tennessee Volunteers Baseball, for joining us on the podcast once again, this time to talk about Orioles' seventh-round pick, Connor Pavlone, the catcher out of Tennessee. Of course, John was on this podcast once before, as we mentioned, back in the winter after the Orioles had traded Jose Iglesias to the Angels and got Gene Pinto and Garrett Stallings in return from LA. He came on to talk about Stallings, who had just finished up his career pitching for Tennessee and had not, of course, pitched a minor league inning till he got to the Orioles. And John was a great guest then, a great guest here as well. And Connor Pavlone, you know, a guy who just a defense-first catcher back there, but the bat just continued to come along, and he just continued to rise up draft boards. Orioles end up taking him in the seventh round, and he did sign a little bit overslot, one of the many overslot guys the Orioles went with later in the draft. His slot value was $237,000 there in the seventh round. He signed for $325,000, his signing bonus with the Orioles, as again, the O's have signed officially all 21 of their draft picks here at this point. But excited to see Pavlone get going and what he can do with the pitching staff, and kind of hoping he ends up at Delmarva at some point by the end of this season to work with all those pitchers there behind the plate, because known as a good framer, can throw guys out as well, and interesting to see the bat. And you know, we did get confirmation from Pavlone that he basically played a lot of the season with a broken hand and only missed, you know, about a week to 10 days, as John talked about. But he seems to be fully healthy now, as reports have come out over the last couple of days. A Rocky Top Insider article and a podcast with Pavlone in the last couple of days talking about that injury during his time at Tennessee. But seems like he's all good to go and shouldn't have any issue getting on the field here to start his minor league career with the Orioles. But back to the major leagues for the O's, a new opponent tonight for the Orioles, as they will play the Detroit Tigers for the first time since 2019. If you can remember back to some of these series between the Tigers and the Orioles over the last couple of years, mostly when both teams have kind of been struggling, there have been some extremely weird games. And to be honest, there's been a lot of crazy games really in the last decade plus between the Orioles and the Tigers. I mean, obviously, you know, the O's swept them in the 2014 ALDS. The Delmon Young double came against the Tigers. There's a lot of great memories there, but also just some weird games. You know, the Chris Dickerson walk-off homer in 2013, also Jose Valverde, that came against the Tigers. You know, you think back the Chris Davis two home runs in extra innings game a couple years ago, I believe 2017, came against the Tigers. You had the Orioles losing to Detroit in what I believe was a 14th or 15th inning on a walk-off grand slam against the Tigers a couple of years ago. Just some weird things happen, especially Comerica Park, and that is where this series will start tonight, is the first of a four-game series tonight between the Orioles and the Tigers, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll get you a little more on the rest of the weekend in the series on tomorrow's episode, but for today, we'll preview game one, and this is a Tigers team which has really been on a pretty positive run lately. They just played one of the craziest games of the season yesterday, beating the Twins 17-14 in Minnesota to finish up that series. Just an unbelievable game of baseball. But the Tigers' victory got them to 49-55 on the season. They had a seven-game winning streak just last week. They're looking like a pretty solid team, well ahead of the Orioles in the rebuild at this point. And for the Tigers, it's going to be one of the top pieces of their rebuild starting. The former number one overall pick, Casey Mize, the 24-year-old right-hander who the Tigers took number one overall in the 2018 draft out of Auburn. He will be making his 20th start of the season. Mize, who has been in the rotation all year long, has a 3.63 ERA, 85 strikeouts in 104 innings. Now, the Tigers have kind of been pulling back the reins on Casey Mize a little bit lately, so I would say the max he lasts in this game would be 5 innings. It's probably going to be closer to 4 innings as the Tigers are trying to kind of limit his innings, limit his pitch count here in the second half of the season. He's coming off a start in Kansas City last week where he went 4 2/3 innings, allowed 4 runs on 6 hits. He did strike out 6 and walk just 1, but the Royals did get to him a bit in that one. So we'll see if the Orioles can get to the right-hander Mize, who, you know, does a, you know, an interesting mix of pitches. He's got a four-seamer and a sinker that, you know, he seemingly throws about half and half, but, you know, it's mostly can be just put together as a fastball that he throws about 51% of the time. And that pitch is his top delivery. It's right around, you know, 92 to 95 miles an hour with that fastball. And then he's going to go to the slider a lot. That is his top secondary pitch, throws it about 27% of the time. It's about an 87 mile per hour slider. It is his best pitch. Opponents hitting just 180 against that thing this year, and he's got 28 strikeouts with it. And then he'll drop in some more pitches. He's got a split finger that he uses as his changeup about 15% of the time. Really likes to go to that pitch as well. Guys are hitting that pitch a little bit better this year, and it's not really a strikeout pitch for him, but he can get ahead with that one. And then occasionally, about 7% of the time, you'll see him drop in a curveball, so a wide variety in the arsenal of Casey Mize. And Mize, the 24-year-old right-hander, on the other side of him will be the 24-year-old left-hander. Alexander Wells will make his second start with the Baltimore Orioles, fourth appearance overall for Wells this season. He has a 4.35 ERA in 10 and a third innings, has struck out 8 batters so far this year, and coming off just really honestly dazzling in his first career start last week in Tampa Bay against the Rays. Wells went 5 2/3 innings, allowing 3 runs on 5 hits. He struck out 7 and walked just 2. It was a little shaky early for Wells in that first career start, but once he really got past the second inning, he settled in against Tampa Bay and he looked really good again. You know, he's only going to run that fastball up to maybe 90 miles per hour max. He's going to sit 88-89 with that fastball, but he's going to throw in that big curveball and then he's going to throw the slider. And, you know, Alex Wells is going to get you out a lot of different ways. And he showed that even with an 89 mile per hour fastball, he can strike you out, setting the Rays down 7 times. So should be a good matchup of young starting pitchers in that one tonight. Then we are back with you tomorrow for our last episode of the week. Of course, we will get you a recap of tonight's game one between the Orioles and the Tigers in Detroit. But tomorrow's episode is actually going to air a little bit later. You know, we are used to posting these right around 7, 8 a.m. every morning. They are in your inbox ready to go. But Friday's episode is going to be a little different. Of course, we do not record on the weekends, but the MLB trade deadline just happens to fall on a Friday this year. It is tomorrow, Friday, July 30th at 4 p.m. Eastern time. That is the trade deadline. So we're going to have our episode out to you after the trade deadline. So expect an episode around probably 5 p.m. Eastern time, maybe later if the Orioles make a couple of moves, maybe earlier if the Orioles don't do anything at the deadline. But we wanted to make sure you have the most updated trade deadline news coming from the Orioles. So I will record the episode right as the trade deadline passes on Friday afternoon, and then sometime early Friday evening, you will have the Friday episode where we will, again, recap game one against the Tigers, then get you all the info you need to know if the Orioles did anything at the trade deadline. Do they trade Paul Fry? Do they trade Tanner Scott? Maybe Cole Sulcer? You know, is there an even bigger move coming? Would they potentially deal someone like Trey Mancini? We will see how it all plays out at the deadline. We'll get you that tomorrow. And then we'll also look ahead quickly to the final 3 games of the Orioles-Tigers series this weekend. But again, the trade deadline episode is coming to you tomorrow. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.